This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today, we're going to have a few news articles, tell you about what's been happening around the world. After that, Alex and myself are going to be talking about two decks we built and how you can play them to show players the game. After which, we're going to talk with a new player, and he is going to tell us the tricks of the trade on how to improve yourself. And finally, we're going to talk to an emerging meta, and they're going to tell you what their meta has been doing to improve themselves. And then we'll have a small closing segment.
All right, so this is episode 22, John, and never has one of our episodes been invalidated so quickly as last week.
Yeah, I mean, there was an emergency FAQ that basically took the combo we talked about and made it vanish. Personally, I think it was a good thing.
I think it's worth noting it came out the day after we released that episode and we were talking about some ways to tech against it. But Game of Thrones isn't really built very well to handle combo. A lot of people who are used to combo-type decks, in the same instance as these infinite combos, not just combo-type decks like we talked about last week, like Maester's Path and things like that that still interact with the challenge phase. But in these other games where there are these infinite combos or where combo is a win condition, Magic's a really good example. You can't set up your combo on turn one or turn two because you're only playing one land a turn and it takes time to get the threshold mana. You have a lot more search effects in Game of Thrones rather than Magic. But most importantly, you play best of three matchups in Magic.
And you have a sidebar where you can bring in the answers to the combo.
Right.
And it's not like the combo didn't have answers, because it did. It's just, why would we have to put it in every single deck we play? That's not fun. And if you don't do it and you show up to a tournament, you might get to watch someone marshal for 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the issues where we talk about sideboard like that, sideboard is essentially in Magic you have a set of cards that are not part of your deck, but after your first match with your opponent, you can swap in some of these cards into your deck to counter a specific combo. And in Thrones, maybe your negative play experience isn't combo. It's you hate playing against Rush. But if you tech against Rush, you're teching against all Rush. But each combo needs to be teched against separately. So really, if you're not allowing sideboards, if you don't have best of three matches so you can see the combo and then try to disrupt it, I don't think combos that don't interact with the challenge phase have any place in Thrones. And I'm very glad to see it eroded.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm really happy with that. I don't think there's much more to say on the FAQ.
I think they also did the right thing. It's fairly minimal. It doesn't affect a ton of other decks. It might tweak Martell Bloodthirst down a bit, but nobody's going to complain about that except, you know, the people who play it. I hate balance errata, but this is a balance erratum to a card that already had some, and basically so that it does the same thing the old erratum did. It was errated to be, initially it was errated to be deathbound, and now it's been errated to be, if it successfully triggers, it's removed from the game. And given that we've gotten more tools to cycle it, functionally it's working the same way the initial erratum was. So I'm pleased with that.
So there's a couple other interesting news articles out there. The big one for me is that Netrunner got demo kits, which is basically two decks that someone could pick up to show a player how the game plays. And we liked that idea so much that we decided to do our own version of demo kits for Thrones, since this episode is going to be focused on new players, new metas, how to bring people into the game, and how people can progress in the game.
And, I mean, this demo kit, the store orders them. It's got a bunch of decks, a bunch of cards. I imagine they have demo written all over them, so you still want to buy your cards, because I've seen similar decks be used to demo things at Gen Con. But, you know, why not? There should be a starting point. You should make it easy for stores to recruit for you, make it easy for them to want to. So I hope we see the same thing for Thrones. I hope we see this for all their LCGs. I think it's a fantastic idea. Now, speaking of, I was mentioning of demos in Gen Con. If I'm correct, I believe that this Tuesday, Gen Con prices go way up. So yes. I think that people, if you're looking to go to Gen Con, I know I can't book my stuff this far in advance. So I have no idea what August is going to look like. But if you are looking to go to Gen Con, it would be a really good idea to go book your tickets as soon as you hear this, because you only have a day left. And there are limited tickets for these Thrones events and the like. I don't know how many have been sold so far. Do you know, John?
The Melee Championship still has 42 tickets left. I see some of the drafts, the early drafts, have been filled and they're done. And the Joust Championship still also has 62 tickets left. So there's lots of tickets left in those events.
Oh, okay. Still, you don't want to pay extra for your badge and so on, so book quickly, book early, make sure you get your tickets.
Now, you know, saying there's 42 tickets left or 62 tickets left sounds like the tournaments won't be big, but in truth, that means they've actually sold somewhere close to 60 tickets. So, you know, it's still going to be the largest Thrones event in North America. Well, I would think, other than Worlds.
What Worlds will look like.
Other than Worlds, yeah, exactly.
That should be big. There was another FFG news article. I think someone called Jonathan Nelson wrote an article. Is that right?
I heard it was Jonathan Nelson for about a day, and then afterwards it was changed to just Dark Notch. Jonathan after that, I think.
Perfect. Well, yeah, so I'd written a pair of articles for them, and now you're copying me?
I just wanted to be like you. You know, one of the great things about the article is that it was actually heavily edited and changed significantly by FFG, and I think for the better. So, I mean, that should be a shout-out to the editors they have there right now. Good work, FFG, if you're listening.
What else do we have this week? Something that I meant to mention, actually, I think last week, Card Game DB seems to be all up to date on chapter packs. They got the Ancestral Home up very, very quickly after the release announcement. They also have a new deck builder now, but they've added a bunch of new features to it. Now, I've still been building on Agot cards because it's familiar to me, but I've been using Card Game DB for more and more other things, so maybe I'll manage to break away from my tradition and give that deck builder a whirl. But I thought it deserved mention, at least.
Don't do it. It looks great. And during that time when they were working on it, I moved over to Agot Cards, and I've been building there since, because Card Game DB still has huge lag problems. It just slows down and stops working. So as soon as they fix that, I'll be back on that site.
Right. What else? Technical standpoint-wise, I did, in the last week and a half, make some minor changes to the Annals of Castle Black. Mostly, the only difference that people using it will notice is that the formulas used to calculate the qualification ratios, I actually normalized that to get rid of any unknowns, because basically, sometimes we have tournaments where we only have information for the cut and that kind of stuff, so it biases things where, you know, about 10% of our data points might be unknown in the overall but not in the cut. So I've subtracted those from that calculation, and we get numbers much closer to what we'd expect, where a deck that's performing on par is getting a ratio of 1 rather than about 1.2 like it was before. So very minor change, but for those math or numbers geeks, numbers dweebs, what's the correct appellation for someone like that?
I'm not a number guy, I don't know.
Oh,
you're the number guy, remember?
And then anything else this week?
We had a bunch of spoilers come out. Heads on Pikes, Longship Iron, Ironwind, I think.
Yeah, Heads on Pikes was spoiled by Team Covenant, so check them out. Longship Ironwind was spoiled by 2 Chance 1 Chump, or 2C1C, as they go by nowadays. And then just the day, I think this Sunday, the day that we're recording, the Quill and Tankard's regulars spoiled a new Elias Sand.
It's pretty cool. We had a couple of regionals, too.
Tell us about these regionals.
Well, I know there was one in Iowa, and Tulsa had theirs. The Tulsa one was awesome because it was televised, so we got to watch it. You know, big thumbs up to guys down there that do so much work for the community and stream these videos for us. They're of pretty decent quality, and it's always fun to watch people playing live at the end of a tournament when they're super tired, and you can pretend that you're a better player than them because they're making mistakes because they've been playing for 16 hours and you're fresh. So that's always fun.
Major problem as well to that specific tournament, the Tulsa tournament, because I got some stats from them that also included whether people were using rivers or not using rivers in the cut. And in fact, in that entire tournament, very, very few people were using rivers. Only one person in the cut was using rivers, which I thought was very, very interesting.
Yeah, the Tulsa meta reminds me a little bit more of the Montreal and Ottawa meta, where people break from the norm and like to play things that they think people would be different and fun. And
but Team Covenant's very own Zach Bunn won with a Dothraki, no agenda.
Yeah, so it was a nice Dothraki.
I think that means we officially have to call him Cal Bunn.
And second place is actually going to be on the cast today, and he played Longship Island Victory 2, one of my favorite decks.
Which is also what won the Iowa regional.
Yep.
At least that's what I think. I haven't gotten official stats from Iowa yet. Although, interestingly, I heard that in Iowa, in the top eight, there was a neutral Conquest Lanny that was mostly a Nobles deck. And
fun.
Yeah, there, a long time ago at Days of Ice and Fire, someone, I think with the name Jerusalem Jones or something, played a neutral Alliance Lanny with lots of Nobles and Devious Intentions and some things like that, some Golden Tooth Mines for draw. And I loved that deck, and I kept tweaking it and kept trying to make it better. Turns out that he was a far better deck builder than I was. But it looks like Conquest might have allowed that deck to get nudged up to the front again, so I really look forward to seeing that deck list if we can see it.
Awesome.
Other tournaments? We had a tournament here in Canada. We had a tournament in Saskatoon, but a Stark Song of Ice is what I'm told won that tournament. And then also from Northern Climes, we got regional results out of Moscow, and that was won by a Barra Knights of the Realm running Fear of Winter. And then finally, one last regional that I got information from. I didn't know this regional was happening, so we didn't get a chance to advertise it on the cast. But in Sofia in Bulgaria, we had a Greyjoy Old Way take a field of 16. It's a meta I didn't know anything about. They reached out to me. They gave me all of the information for the annals. It was fantastic. One of the very neat things that came out of there was a Lannister Defiance deck, which was posted on Agot Cards thereafter. It took top in the Swiss. We don't usually do props and slops. That's someone else's things. But I really feel like in the last week, there's a slop that is deserved, and that's to people on Agot Cards who copy a deck and then publish it with the same name. So some random person has the deck of the first Italian championship winner or something like that with exactly the same name and all the same description, and then people are there commenting on the list as if it was the original builder. If you're going to copy a list, by all means do it. Change the name or say adapted from or something like that. Give credit to the original deck builder.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice any of that.
I think it's people that are doing it, you know,
unintentionally.
Clicking by accident. They're taking the deck, they're copying it. They didn't publish it on their own list or edit a couple of cards and publish it. But if you're going to take someone else's deck list, at least give credit to the original author or change the name or something like that. I think that.
Or don't hit publish.
Or don't hit publish, exactly. If you want to play with that deck exactly as is, might as well copy it off them. That's fine. Just it gets really awkward. In the last week, I've seen like five or six people comment on decks that were not from the original person that built them. So I thought that was kind of annoying. And then finally, I'll mention this again in the end, I got news this week that one of the regionals has moved. So there was a regional scheduled in Oslo in Norway, except that it was not actually scheduled. The date was still to be decided. That's actually moved to Varberg in Sweden. So as far as I know, that's the only regional that has changed countries, but that'll give Sweden a third regional, which is quite neat for them,
yeah.
I suppose. Alright, so as John mentioned in the earlier segment, the plan for this episode is to talk a lot about new players, to talk about new metas, to talk about ways to get new players in and how to get them up to this competitive scene that we're typically talking from that standpoint. And first of all, I'd like to apologize to Lauren from the Boston meta. We had initially recorded with her a segment on growing a new meta. I think it turned out very, very nicely. However, it disappeared. I don't know that we had a recording issue again.
That was my fault. I'm so sorry, because I actually ended up recording that segment alone, and that would have been perfect in here. But
So definitely props out to that meta, which has been a fast-growing meta that has gotten some phenomenally competitive players, but has also done things a little bit outside of the beaten path. They had a melee tournament this last weekend that they had.
Good on them.
They have amazing prize support. Every time I see one of their tournaments, there are new things that I've never heard of before. And they also have a really good track record of bringing in new players from competitive and non-competitive backgrounds. And it's fantastic to see. What are we going to do then, John, today? What are we going to talk about?
We are going to talk to a new player and find out from him what he thinks the most important things were going from a start at zero to 3 months later taking second in a 32-person tournament. We're going to talk to a meta that's been around for less than a year, and we're going to find out what has made them one of the more competitive metas in North America. And then we are going to introduce players to the game, hopefully, using starter decks. And now, we know the people listening to our cast are not new players, but these might be some fun decks that they can build, take to their local store, and, you know, teach other people how to play.
Well, let's start with that right away, because one of the problems a lot of people, and we've talked about it as well, is that the core set is actually a really poor starting point. The decks are hard to decipher. It's hard to tell exactly what, for instance, what that Targ deck is trying to do.
It's just trying to be Targy. It has red cards.
And you know, you can blame FFG for that. It's not a very good starting point, but they were also trying to give something that you could then use with some power cards if you bought several of them and had the first cycle of chapter packs and things like that. But really, a lot of people have dedicated time to posting deck lists that you can build with two core sets that work out slightly better, that have, you know, some more consistency, a smoother resource base, that make more sense. Other people have spent time with the first Tilt articles on CardGameDB trying to build decks where you can buy maybe five or six chapter packs instead and be able to assemble them. But we decided to approach that a little differently. We decided to assume that you're a player who has the whole card pool at your disposal, and you want to introduce new players in a fun, not too complicated match, doesn't have too many rules, too many keywords, naval enhancements, shadows, but still plays out like a full Game of Thrones match.
No winter summer tech.
No. And, I mean, really, it should be a deck that when you look at a card, you can tell what it's trying to do. And I think that's some of the problem for some of the bouncers in the Targ deck and the core set, or some other cards where you're wondering why your deck has this plot card, simply because they had to include it somewhere. So what did you build, John?
I built a starter deck for Stark, and it's basically Direwolves. So I didn't have any of this, you know, negative play experience like Val, so, you know, I didn't want to mass kill characters like that. I ran one no quarter just so when people drew that one no quarter, they could be like, oh yeah, this is it, this is my super card. But the rest of the time I used Claim Raise, like Winter's Coming, so that my opponent actually had more choice in what they were going to kill. I got, you know, some Direwolf tech, I got the, and I basically put one of all of the important Stark characters from the books and the TV show, so that players can get a bit of a feel for, you know, knowing what they're playing with. It's always great to have a couple wolves, but it's even better when Jon Snow's running along beside them, you know, with the Blackfish or one of the other key characters like Sansa in the mix. So that's basically the idea, and they tried to show some Stark goodness. So we got things like To Be a Wolf and Wolf Dreams in the deck, to let them get a taste for, you know, Search and a little bit of Stand, because I knew that you were going to be building a Lannister deck with a little bit of Neil, and I wanted to make sure that they could have some interplay against your Neil, so that if you knelt something that they might be able to stand it right back up and have some fun that way.
So it's worth noting that we built these decks, but we also tested them. We tested them against one another. We wanted the matchups to be fairly even, the games to be able to play out in very different ways. So this deck has evolved a little bit from its initial incarnation, where you were saying, oh, it would be really neat to put in all these Direwolves, but we found out that, you know, if you were getting the Bran Stark with the Shaggy Dog, it was just really hard for the other deck that wasn't quite tweaked to it to deal with that specifically. And that maybe, you know, Shaggy Dog with Grey Wind, very fun, very powerful combination, but also a little rough on the other player. So we did wind up tweaking the Stark deck a little ways down, rather than tweaking my Lannister deck up.
Yep.
And then we wanted basically the traditional pairing. I figured it was a pretty good starting point. If we do this again later, we might do another two sets of decks that pair off nicely. But I decided to build a a Lannister deck, again, trying to limit the negative play experiences. So I didn't want Castellans. I didn't want highly repeatable Neil. I didn't want things like that. So I decided to try to build a deck that I've always sort of been interested in, and I started with Adam Marbrand, who makes armies not Neil if you have more gold. I knew that we were going to be running Ally Hate, so it opened a few doors so I could run a couple armies like Sir Armory's Poachers and things like that that work the same way. And then mostly it was a fair bit of gold tech, some light Neil in there. And the other thing that I did add there that keys into sort of building gold in the challenges phase if you need it is the Ashmark Knight with the Dragonbone Daggers and the location Ashmark. So you can either discard cards to draw cards, discard cards to get gold, or discard a card and pay a gold to get back another card from your discard pile, which gives you some toys to play with.
So we tried to limit this whole thing to three keywords. So we have Stealth, Renown, and Deadly. So that you don't have to, try to explain Joust. You don't have to try to explain Melee. You don't have to try to explain Stalwart or Infamy or any of these other keywords. You're playing with these three core, and they're probably, I think they're probably the three easiest keywords to understand.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think Deadly is actually quite tricky, but these are keywords that come up often. It's good to learn them in the beginning, and they're keywords that once they're explained to you, you can at least tell what they're trying to do. I know that a frequent comment when people find out what Infamy does is, why would you want to do that? I don't understand what the goal is until you see cards like Widow's Wail that specifically benefit from having power on them. Overall, when we were playing these, I think we wound up breaking about 50-50. I don't know exactly how it will play out for beginners who don't have the same knowledge of the card pool. I think that maybe the Stark deck, the fact that you have these search effects, you might need to know which cards you're getting, might make it a little harder at the beginning and a little easier to use once you've played the deck a couple of times. The Lannister one might be slightly easier for a new player to use in the first game or two, but it's probably harder to win with in the long run.
But that's why they're good decks to learn with, because you'll learn those strengths and weaknesses of the two houses.
And I think there's room to grow. I think the seventh time you play this deck, you will play it differently and you will play it better. And I think that adds a level of complexity that you can grow into without throwing a ton of new rulings at you.
Yep. So we're joined today by Mark D, and he just took second place yesterday, right, at Tulsa, which was a 30-person tournament, Mark?
32, I believe.
Now, normally right here we give some time for the player to introduce and talk about their accomplishments and stuff, but I'd actually like to do that on your behalf, if that's okay this time.
Sure, that's perfect. Not much to say, I would think.
And that's actually why you're on the show today, because we're talking about new metas and new players. And Mark, that was the first tournament period that you ever went to. You ended up taking second. You've been playing the game for 3 months, is that correct?
Yeah, it was the first time I went to a league night. It was March 22nd, so 3 months and a week.
That's awesome. It's really great to see that we have these newer players that after a few months can actually go to a tournament and do really well.
One of the first questions that jumps to mind when something like that happens, not that it's out of this world, but are you quite familiar with card games in general? Did you come from a background with Magic or any of the other?
No. Board game background would be sort of where I hail from.
You ended up taking a Longship Island Victory 2, House of Dreams, to the tournament. And I'd I know a little bit about how you built the deck and how you tested with some people in your meta. Could you tell us about that? Because I think this is where you got an advantage, or you got help, basically, to develop yourself as a player to the point where you can take second in a big event.
Sure. Whenever I started this game, I started with my best friend. We ended up splitting the houses 3-3, and so I was with Greyjoy, Targ, and Barra. Fell into Greyjoy. Been building different decks back and forth for these past 3 months. Had hit the old way sort of during its prime, but burned out on it and ran into just some issues. So I looked at a different way to take advantage of the things I really enjoyed. So I started building this HOD 2.0 deck with the idea of killing people and pressure and choke. And the local meta is just fantastic. I don't know if we've mentioned it, but I guess I'm from the Springfield meta, which has Kennen, who's Will Lentz of the TC1T, along with world champion Greg Atkinson and Brett Zeiler, and then a bunch of other guys that are just awesome. started focusing on this deck when I realized I was going to go to a regional. I was excited about that. And so I sort of stuck my head out to Greg. I was like, hey, man, I'd like to get some help prepping this deck. And we would meet up throughout the weeknights, and he would have 8 or 9 different decks, and I would play my deck against it each time, against each of his decks, and just really try and focus and hone and get feedback and ideas. And some of his ideas were great, and some of them didn't pan out for how I played. But doing that just on almost on a player-by-player basis, I played this deck probably to the point where I'm sort of burned out on it, I guess. But against Will, against Greg, against Brett Zeiler, and all those guys, just sort of fine-tuning it over the course of 2 or 3 weeks.
So basically it was these experienced players that we could say took you under their wing and took the time to test with you, to play with you so that you could play. And it sounds like you played a lot. And this is one of the big things that I think is amazing nowadays, that, you know, in the past it would be really tough to find a lot of players, but now that the game is growing, there's bigger local metas, there's Octagon. I know you don't play on Octagon that much, but...
Yet. I feel like it's a staggering process. Like, I'm intimidated by Octagon. I feel like that's maybe my next step. But, like, not being comfortable enough with the rules, and even playing with somebody like Greg, who isn't necessarily a rules lawyer himself, can be tough to, like, go into that Octagon setting and stick my head out and not know if I'm playing correctly or if somebody else is playing incorrectly against me. And that's where, like, Will and Daryl and Greg and Brett and, like, players, and not just my meta, I felt like after going to Tulsa Regional and seeing their meta, the players there, they've just been so good about, oh, here's sort of where you're at in the game. You're a little uncertain of how things maybe work. I'll be sort of the ringleader, and I'll guide you through this game together, even though you may win, or even though I may have to rule on something that is against me, as far as that goes. So it's been very helpful.
See, people don't have to be scared to come out to these tournaments because, in general, the Thrones community is a great community. And I actually watched some of your games on the live feed, and I noticed something that at first I was like, why is this guy reading so many cards? At the time, I didn't know that you had only been playing for 3 months. I think that is so good to do, that if you forget a card and you look at it, you go, you know, I've seen this, but I think it does X. Take the time to read it. That's going to prevent so many mistakes. That is a great habit for a new player. So I commend you on that.
Yeah, it's also tricky. This is a staggering game to get into. The rules, I complain to Will all the time of how convoluted they are. Whenever I run up against certain houses, I have to read the cards even more, which can definitely be a detriment.
I think it's actually really much better to do that than to try to assume you know the cards.
Right, of course, yeah.
You know, if you were to give some counsel to a new player, what would it be? Like, you've been playing for 3 months, you're at this point, you know, you're doing well in tournaments, you're thinking to make the step to Octagon. I see you're on Skype all the time, that's amazing, it's a good community, I hope you're profiting from that. What would you say to a new player?
Sure. I guess sticking your head out and looking for that local meta would be the first thing, because that's where things really took off. I showed up at that first night and played Daryl for my first game, and I had 3 restricted cards in my deck. And I had no idea about an FAQ. I did win. I won. I think I had a core set and 4 chapter packs, you know, and I beat his Bouncing Mira, which just gave me fits. I was encountering rules at such a rapid pace in that first game that my head was exploding. It was like, oh, blanking attachments makes them fall off locations. Mirrors blanking it was just spinning, but it was exciting. And so I think getting out to local meta and being open and just allowing guys to guide you and being open to the idea that you have no idea what you're getting into and the amount of rules, but that it really pays off and it really gets fun as you go through it if you don't get too upset about it. Having somebody to have grow through that learning experience with you is very helpful. Splitting the card pool can be good and bad. In the initial point, there's $1,000 worth of cards out there. That's a big entry point, a necessary one. I was building a lot of fun decks, I think, utilizing Card Game DB. I would like to have gotten on Skype earlier. I think that I waited. I was sort of intimidated. And that's something that you shouldn't be. And maybe it needs to be a little easier, I think, to find that Skype group and get into it, because having not used Skype, that was probably the biggest hurdle. But I was definitely intimidated by it. Like, here's all these guys. I've been around, know what they're doing. I don't want to sound like an idiot and be an annoying guy asking questions all day. It's never come off that way, I guess.
Sometimes you have to have a little thick skin, because some of the guys joke around, as long as you can take it as joking.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, they have a couple beer and they joke. And that's,
of course.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us, Mark. And hopefully you exceed your current performance at your next tournament and you take one slot higher.
So today we're joined by two of the Montreal meta, and the reason that they're here today is to tell us about how they took that meta that's only a year old and they transformed it into what I think is a pretty competitive meta. You guys travel a lot. You've done really well in some major events, the most recent being New York, where all three people that went down made the cut, the top eight. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so one of the people that is actually joining us was one of the finalists that ended up taking second in the tournament. You guys want to tell us just like, in a couple lines, a little bit about yourself.
I'm Peter. I started playing regional season 2013. Did pretty well that season, and I was one of the first three players in the Montreal meta.
Peter, you're not talking about your portfolio here, but you've won how many store championships this season?
Yeah, I think I found out in New York I'm tied with JC Wama in England. We both have four, which we think is the most anyone has.
Yeah, for sure. And they had four SCs this year. You took second in the Montreal regional.
Top four in New York.
And those are the only regionals you've made it to so far. And Salim?
Yeah, but my name is Salim. I joined the meta, I'm not sure when. Yeah, a friend of mine convinced me to play a few games with him, and I started that way. At some point I met Peter and the other guys from the Montreal meta. And since then we are playing together, I think, pretty often, right?
And you've also traveled to a bunch of Thrones events, and I think you've placed in all of them? You've made the cut?
Yeah, I barely made the cut for the New York regionals, even if I push it to the final. But for the other tournament I attend, yeah, I made the cut every time.
Well, that's great. You know, that's amazing that you guys are traveling so much and doing so well. So what do you think let you become a competitive meta? I remember seeing Peter for the very first time, and he didn't even have all the cards. He's like, I bought most of them last night. I wanted this and this and that, but I couldn't find those chapter packs. And then when he sat down across from me, he started playing. It was like playing a robot. The guy was so focused. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, this meta's going to do well because these guys are serious about the game. But it was in a nice way. You know, when I say a robot, I mean, sure, he was still a nice guy and he was still fun to play with, but he wasn't making mistakes. I mean,
yeah, don't worry. I take that as the utmost of compliments. But, yeah, I mean, I had a couple things written down, and that's the number one thing I've written down is right from the beginning, and I think we can't go too much further here without talking about Philip Paquin. Me, Philip, and Salim, and Julian, who is the tournament organizer, we've been like the core four players there for the past year, for sure. And right from the beginning, me and Philip, when we sat down against each other, we would never allow takebacks unless it basically ended the game immediately. We would never allow that. So we've just become very good at, I think, not missing triggers. I mean, it happens to everyone still, but I think we like to think it happens a bit less than if we didn't have that policy.
So for both of you, I know we got a little bit into some background, but is this your first card game that you've been playing at a competitive level, or are you coming from another card game and that's what's allowed you to jump in so quickly?
I played the Decipher Lord of the Rings card game back in the early 2000s when that came out, but then I kind of left because of, you know, economic issues. And I haven't played one since, so it's been a really long time since I've played one.
Yeah, I used to play Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh! When I was younger, but I stopped like 5 or 6 years ago. I'm trying to build my own collection now, but so far I'm just borrowing cards from Peter and Philip.
All right, so let's get back to it. So you were saying that you basically started off in this kind of friendly but competitive mindset where you wouldn't allow takebacks, and you guys were always striving to basically play at your best, become the best pilots possible. Now, I know that you guys had you have a pretty active tournament scene there in Montreal. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
It's really all a credit to Julian. he's basically ran a tournament like clockwork every month, really no exceptions, and it's really encouraged competitive play.
Yeah, but I think you and Philip and Julian like set the bar pretty high for the competitive level at our tournaments. What happens often is like everyone have different houses he play. So when we meet each other at the tournament, you don't face the same deck every time. Like for myself, I think I play mostly Bara, Stark. Philip is mostly Gejo, so that's helped the meta to diversify. And
yes, I actually found that interesting that your meta actually has a more of a European feel to it, because in general, I find that the Europeans have more house loyalty, and I did notice that. I mean, you can almost guess within one or two houses what someone's going to be playing because they're house loyal, kind of like what Salim was saying. So it's interesting that, you know, you get to see a huge variety, and I can totally agree with you that that helps you build better decks because you're more aware of the strengths and weaknesses of a bunch of different houses because you play all the houses regularly and not just whatever the, you know, the top cookie cutter builds are. You guys also travel a lot, right?
Before we move on from that point, I just want to say that the European flavor, I guess, of the meta in Montreal, a lot of that has to do with Philip Paquin, who like constantly talks about the European meta and like their ideas and stuff and passes it along, and like a lot of them get used. Like it's stuff that I don't generally see on Agat cards and stuff. It's like stuff from message boards I can't even read. So it's really great, and like he really helps promote those ideas when they're meta.
I know Philip is very active on the French message boards, but also he looks at some of the others, right? He looks at Italy and something else he mentioned once.
He keeps on top of a lot of that stuff, yeah.
So does that mean eventually the Montreal meta's got to travel to Stalic and win Stalic?
Funny you should mention that. Maybe next year, we'll see.
The good thing that we are close to the Ottawa, Gatineau and Ottawa meta.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not a long ride for us to go there for your, I think it's Friday or Saturday tournaments.
Yep.
So that helps out, like, to see what people are playing right now and try to build a response to that.
Yeah, it's always good to be able to have those tournaments of, you know, 16, 20 people or whatever. So it's great that the metas travel so that we end up at each other's locations and able to play those bigger events, because it's absolutely correct that you see way more variety in decks.
It's a good thing, I think, to move around in other meta so you can see some cards being played.
So given that you guys have mentioned that you started off with a fairly competitive mindset and have been growing that tournament scene, you know, regular tournaments and things like that, how has recruitment of new players and maybe new players who don't have that competitive mindset to start, how has that progressed over time?
Yeah, you know what? It does kind of stifle, I think, a lot of the newer players. You know, they just come to tournaments, go 0-4, and, you know, sometimes they never show up again, no matter how nice you talk to them.
Because they always end up first against Peter, and
yeah,
never go good for them.
Peter's not willing to take the first round loss and then win the tournament?
Yeah, that's a risk.
You know, sometimes, Peter, it's good to like introduce these newer players in a more gentle fashion.
But I mean, yeah, there is that on one hand, but on the other hand, we have a pretty competitive meta now, and, you know, like if I brought Chud decks, then maybe, like, you know, people would be winning. But it was a huge turning point last November, I feel like, stating that, like, when the Lanny No Agenda deck became incredibly popular, I think it, like, first won a tournament in Europe, not the Shadows heavy build, like, starting off with at the gates or whatever, but I ended up bringing a deck like that. Basically, it raised the bar of how everyone had to play in the meta, because before that, we were just kind of making okay decks, not amazing decks, they weren't really top tier. But after having to learn to play against Lanny No Agenda, which is like, it's so annoying if you don't know how to play against it, I think that really did help. So net decking, it really helps, you know? I mean, give it a chance.
I know you guys have, before major events like New York, test sessions, right, where you guys would show up every Wednesday or something and work together to refine people's decks, to test different types of decks. Tell us a bit about that. Like, how does that group, that core group of four or five people, get together and kind of, you know, collectively brainstorm?
Like, for example, the New York tournament, we meet two times before that, like on Monday and Wednesday, and we start moving to New York on Friday. Usually, we try to play every week, usually on Wednesday nights.
But, yeah, so we do test a lot. I mean, we generally, when we go to these test sessions, we have, like, our general deck planned out already, and we just use it to change, like, the one or two last cards.
What is the plan going forward, then, for the meta? How do you continue to maintain that competitive edge, maybe add some new competitive players? How do you make sure that next tournament you do just as well as you did in New York?
Yeah, actually, I joked before about not getting new players, but we actually do have a couple of promising new players. I mean, I guess the long and short of it is that they'll come, but they'll come slowly, the new players. Encouraging good deck building right from the start, I think, helped. Like, basically, when Salim came aboard, he did recommend to buy certain chapter packs or whatever, but we also did say, hey, but if you actually want to build a good deck, we can lend you the card. The way the game is built, it's easy to do that. There have been at least three or four new players that we've added over time that we've done that. And, like, they've made increasingly competitive decks. They're much, much better off than they would have been otherwise.
The problem is maybe there are too many cards for a new player to get in. Like, for myself, I'm trying to build my own collection, but, like, the old chapters, I can't get them right now. I have to borrow. So if you want to build a competitive deck, it's really hard to go alone. And that really needs someone who got all the cards and he isn't playing the house you want to play and everything.
I think it's a very important point that you can and should share cards with newer players to help them up to that level and continue to do so. People do talk about the barrier of entry. There are a lot of cards. This is like we've basically exceeded the level of a Magic the Gathering standard format of about 1,750, 1,800 cards. And we have an upcoming announcement about limiting the card pool. But one of the advantages that typically a player will have all the cards available at their disposal. Someone in the meta will. And you're depriving yourself of a huge opportunity if you're not willing to lend those cards, willing to help people start up, willing to lower that barrier of entry.
Yeah, maybe allow people to, you know, print out a card for casual play and then use that for their deck until they get the cards they need.
Oh, yeah, we've always allowed proxies and that sort of thing. I mean, there's no reason not to.
That's my view as well. What do you lose by allowing proxies? You encourage better deck building, better decks, more competitive for you, a greater challenge for them and for you. There's just no disadvantage to allowing proxies.
Yeah, I mean, all it is just, like, you limit your opponent's card pool so, like, you could potentially win and get an ego boost. It's not necessary.
Is there anything else you guys think has really added to how rapidly your meta has become competitive and grown?
I guess there's one last thing. I mean, it's obvious, but, like, we have a Facebook group that we talk on fairly often, and even if we don't talk on the group itself, we, like, message each other pretty often. We just talk a lot about Game of Thrones.
It's a good thing, too, that we have a core set of players that are always there at tournaments, so it's easy for new players to come in and see that there are people playing this game, not like one or two people showing up for the tournaments.
Yes.
You create a Facebook group and you go into the store and you put an elastic band on all their chapter packs with a card that says, if you play Game of Thrones and you want to play other people, come here and just ask the guy. Yeah, the Ottawa meta just got two new players as well. One of them is pretty active actually on the Skype group.
What's his name?
The Thesaurus Rex?
Yep.
Oh, he's from there. Okay. I think, you know, Robbie Stark, come play with us. Like, what's wrong with you?
Robbie, we're looking for you.
Yeah, include this in the podcast, seriously.
All right, well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, John, so we've heard from some new players. They've told us that you're supposed to go out to regionals. So this weekend, there are regionals to go to. If you're living in Germany, in München or Munich to the Anglophone, there is a German language card pool tournament this weekend. If you're in the States, anywhere in the States, you should be heading to Missouri to the, I think they're calling it the Pyromancer's Cache, regional tournament, but there will be Greg Atkinson, there'll be John Bruno, there'll even be a championship level player, the world's only championship level player at this tournament.
And really, that's the guy I'd be afraid of.
And then also I've had Urban from Singapore reach out to get us to mention the Singapore regionals, which is actually going to be held over the next 2 weekends. So this weekend on the 5th of July, there's a Melee tournament as part of the regional, and then next weekend on the 12th of July, there's the Joust on Saturday. So that's the same place that other Singapore events have been, other Singapore events that have been in the annals. That's Gamazaurus Rex. But it's always great. It's probably the meta that is furthest away from us that we hear from regularly. So it's always great to hear from them.
I snoop on their Facebook group.
Yeah, so do I, actually. I do the same. I've joined far too many metas Facebook groups.
Yeah, it's good to talk with players around the world. So.
And aside from that, I'm going to repeat again that one of the regionals has moved. I don't think I have a date for it yet, but the Oslo regional in Norway has moved to Varberg in Sweden. Aside from that, what are we doing in the next little while, John?
That's a really good question, Alex. It's going to be a surprise next week.
It's going to be a surprise to me, too. I look forward to the surprise.
Yeah.
All right. You do the sign-off again.
Okay. 1 second. We have to find something snappy. I'm going to Google. Snappy
sign-off?
Sign-off.
I'm disappointed, John.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.